Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I've got a dice tower behind me, and I give you 3 rolls on the tower, and whatever questions I roll for you, that's where we start.
Cool.
This one's roll swap. If you had the opportunity to swap roles with any Hunger Games actor in any of the films, who would you choose and why?
Ooh, that's hard. Because I want to say Elizabeth Banks as Effie, but I also don't want to spend so much time in the chair every day. Because that's hard. So I'm going to go with Lenny Kravitz as Cinna. Because I still get to be fabulous, but I don't think I have to spend 4 or 5 hours in the makeup chair.
I'm just really impressed by how well thought out that answer was.
It's just, I remember watching Hunter and Tom, and I also had a wig every day on Hunger Games, so it took me a little bit longer to get ready, but never as long as it took Hunter, and she's so beautiful and fabulous in this movie, and she had to bleach her eyebrows and do all the things, and I was like, good God be with you, but it couldn't be me.
Here is an acting-specific question for you. This is called favorite, least favorite. What is your absolute favorite part of the acting process? Like things like putting your costume on for the first time, stepping on set, rehearsing. But then I also kind of want the opposite. Not necessarily your least favorite, but a part of the process where you still see room to grow for yourself and you're eager to tackle that.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think my favorite is meeting my crew that you're going to kind of go on this journey with for the next couple months, depending on what film you're on. Could be weeks, could be months. They become kind of the closest people in your time on a project. I have a really wonderful A camera operator that I met on Hunger Games that I adore, Dave Thompson, who, you know, all of my A camera operators kind of become my best friends because they're your allies on set. And therefore, it's just kind of like, that's my favorite part, is getting to meet those people and get to know their stories and where they come from, their families, why they do this, do they like it? And I have a really good time with them. With least favorite, honestly, it's like on Hunger Games, I had to be very, very sweaty and dirty. And I am not good at the texture stuff on my hands, on my face. And I can get I feel very bratty about it where I'm like during lunch, like secretly washing my hands and like secretly getting dirt off. There's definitely room to grow in that department, I feel.
You're talking to a germaphobe who's a little OCD. I very much understand that.
I understand, yeah.
This is my would you rather question. I feel like I might know this answer based on your last one. Would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene?
Ooh, fake sneeze. Fake sneeze all the way. Oh my gosh. I think about the fake vomit scenes, and you know how they're done with like the tube, or you have to hold something in your mouth for a long time. Absolutely not. Bless everyone who's able to do it. I can't. Couldn't be me.
The only follow-up question to that, though, is can you do a convincing fake sneeze? Because again, gross out things, I can't handle them, but being able to do a real fake sneeze feels so hard to me.
I want to say I've never tried, but...
Oh, wow. That goes into the top tier of fake sneezes I've heard on Ladies' Night. I'm very impressed.
I'm not as far along with like Anya Taylor-Joy being able to like time out her nosebleeds, but we're there.
That's a thing?
Oh, in the movie Emma, she has the scene with, he says, you know, if I loved you more, if I loved you less, I may be able to talk about it more. She looks up at him and she has this one stream of blood come down. She gets a lot of nosebleeds. And she was able to say like, oh, it's coming, roll the cameras, and then got the perfect She's a pro. I can't do that.
My God. All right. I'm going to add one more follow-up question. What is the most difficult, like seemingly silly, mundane, everyday thing to do when you're acting? Like things like fake driving or like pretending to wake up?
Oh, well, I did have to pretend to wake up in West Side Story. And that was a fun experience because none of us are really pretty wake uppers. And I had to pretend to be, which was very fun. I say like the most mundane, it's actually like being in the car, not necessarily driving, but in a movie I did for A24 called Y2K, there was a scene where I had to be in the passenger seat. And it was just, I didn't have to say anything in the scene. And you just kind of like, what do I do in the, do I look around? Do I ever move my head? You just start overanalyzing what you do. I have no idea what I do in the car, it was just kind of like, I'm a passenger driver as well, because I'm a very careful driver. So a lot of the times I find myself looking at the crosswalk and being like, so that's what I did. But it's a very weird feeling for sure.
Hello everyone, welcome back for a new edition of Collider Ladies Night. This is a guest that I've been eager to have on the show since West Side Story, but now especially because I am a massive Hunger Games fan and I'm so excited about how damn good The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is. Rachel Zegler, welcome to Ladies Night and huge congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
What was the performance you saw, the movie you watched, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor?
You know, I fell in love with the idea of performing because I lived in New Jersey growing up and came to see Broadway shows all the time. I saw a woman named Ashley Brown in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway as Belle, and I wanted to be in musical theater. I just fell in love with the idea of performing live and the big, beautiful costumes and everything in between. I loved it. I will say movie-wise, I think it was probably Oscar Isaac in Inside Llewyn Davis. I think I was like 13 years old when I saw that, which is way too young to see Inside Llewyn Davis, or at least too young to understand it fully. But it was seeing a Latino in a space where being a Latino was not the basis of his character. He just kind of got to exist and he got to give a brilliant performance and he got to check off all the boxes of the things that he's amazing at, because he's an amazing musician, an amazing singer, an amazing actor, funny and self-deprecating and amazing. And I just remember looking at it and watching it and being like, I want to do that.
I definitely can understand that. That right there is one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies. And also, I think one of the most underrated. I don't think anybody talks about that movie nearly enough.
It doesn't top people's lists very often. I remember Tom, my co-star in Hunger Games, like it's part of his like Letterboxd top four. And I was like, you're the only other person I've met who names that when somebody asks what your top four films of all time are. And that's my number one. So It was like a kismet thing for me.
Good taste right there. I appreciate it. So you decide you want to be an actor. At the time, what did you think was step one to becoming a professional actor? And now that you've done it, would you recommend that first step to an aspiring actor? Or did you find something more effective along the way?
I fell into this industry by accident. So I don't think anything I did should be replicated, unless what you're replicating is the fact that I tried. You'll never regret trying. The worst they could say is no, and then you try again. But you know, when I decided I wanted to be an actor, since I wanted to be in musical theater, I was just like, I'm going to start doing community productions. And I was 12 years old and did Fiddler on the Roof in my town where I grew up. And that kind of started it for me. I just kept doing community theater productions and high school theater productions. And it was when I was in high school, I was 16 years old when I auditioned for West Side Story. So from 12 to 16 was like the only time I was doing like amateur theater and wedding singing to make money on the weekends. And then all of a sudden I was up for this huge Steven Spielberg movie. And a year later booked it. So my advice is to try, but also just to learn by experience. You don't have to pay $1 million to get training. I feel like sometimes it really robs these young aspiring actors blind, because they make a lot of empty promises, where in reality, you can learn from the experience of really working with others and learning by examples that you see. That's how I learned, and I don't regret a second of it.
It's so true. Trying sounds so just like so simple, but that really is probably one of the best first steps to take.
Well, I mean, I was one of 30,000 girls who sent in a tape for West Side Story, and I got it. And all I did was send in a like unlisted YouTube video link to a random email address, and it got seen. So it sounds like a fake story written in a tabloid, but it really is exactly what happened. So
to build on the idea of learning by experience, I love asking this question. What is a seemingly silly question about the way that movies are made that you were afraid to ask on the West Side Story set that you would encourage more new actors to have the courage to ask?
You should. Okay, so it sounds really silly, but you should ask where, like, what can you see? This is a question I ask really my A camera operators, but also your focus operators or your best friends on set. I remember on Snow White, I had a focus operator named Ollie. So awesome. And it was my first like number one on the call sheet. It was a very like crazy experience for me being on set every day, working all day, every day, doing everything. So a lot of it was, I know how to give you the take that you want. I think at least you got to go in with that confidence. But I got to know what the camera is actually looking at, because you know, is it further away? Do I have to do more on my face? You have to imagine that your face is going to be blown up on a big screen that people are going to be sitting in the front row for. On West Side Story, it was something that I didn't really know to ask yet. And also I was not experienced in screen acting at all. So even just the micro movement of an eyebrow is a gigantic expression when you're thinking about it on an IMAX screen. So I really had to learn how to control my face in a way. I had Janine Tesori, a beloved Broadway composer, a dear friend of mine who was our vocal producer on West Side Story, come up and like hold my eyebrows down while I sang so that I could learn to just keep it all. You're used to being on stage, you're playing to the last row. And all of a sudden the dynamic has completely shifted. And I had a really hard time. It was a really hard thing where I felt like I had bit off more than I could chew and that they'd made the wrong decision because I didn't know how to do that. And I was surrounded by people who seemed to find it very easy. And I didn't find it very easy. So ask what you can see. Where's the camera? Is it a cowboy? Is it a dirty single? What are we doing? And then adjust accordingly.
It's a good tip right there. I love how you say, like, I don't know if I like felt like I was worthy of being there. And then look what happened with that movie and look how people responded to that performance. So the next stage of that, and here's another question I always love asking. I love asking actors about the reality of breaking out in Hollywood, because the way we see it can be completely different than what you feel. So
yeah. What
would you say is one misconception about having your breakout role? But then I want the opposite, something that West Side Story did that you could feel changing things for the better for you.
Yeah. I mean, it was a confidence thing for sure. Because we made West Side Story and then the pandemic hit, which meant nobody was working. And unbeknownst to myself and the rest of the cast, the studio had been planning to push it because of the pandemic, which made perfect sense. I mean, it had no real chance of kind of even breaking through the zeitgeist of conversation without a proper press tour and a release that people would go to see in theaters. So we were all kind of waiting on bated breath for a trailer or first look images, anything, because our careers kind of relied on the release of something else. Something needs to come out. We need to, you know, see something. Because I wasn't booking roles solely because they hadn't seen West Side Story yet. There was no clips. We couldn't hear anything, couldn't hear her sing, couldn't see her act. Does she dance? What does she look like on camera? Like all of these things are taken into consideration by producers and directors and any kind of filmmaker when they're planning their next project. So I have these amazing agents that are rallying for me in these casting rooms and saying, well, she's Spielberg's next ingenue. And they say, well, we haven't seen anything. Why would we? So you could tape all you want, But the reality is they want to see what your dynamic actually is at the end of the day. That was really hard for all of us. That is not a singular experience for myself. For any new actor that was kind of coming onto the scene at that point, it really shifted things, because we had this preconceived notion that the making it in Hollywood came immediately after wrapping your first movie. And it's got to come out. It's got to come out. And even then, the pandemic was still going on. We had the Omicron variant. People did not show up in the theaters. I was making Snow White in London, and it hadn't really made a peep over there. And then all of a sudden it dropped on streaming, and I couldn't leave my apartment without getting stopped. And it was a confidence boost. It was a transition of how I am in public, understanding where I can and cannot go without being photographed and everything like that, because tabloid culture in London is a lot different than it is here in the US. But it definitely, I don't think any lesson is a negative lesson. So I find it all very positive. It's a transition for real.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That's quite the whirlwind. I guess the next stage of that process is figuring out what the next thing to do after your breakout role. I'm not sure the shooting order with everything, but I'll use it with West Side Story and Hunger Games in particular. What was it about Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes and the role of Lucy Gray that, one, would help you evolve your craft in a way that you wanted, but also like do that thing where you're showing the industry the version of you you want to and what you're capable of?
Yeah, I kind of viewed Lucy Gray in a way. It's not the same probably to the general public, but to me, it was my Llewyn Davis, where I was like, I get to check the boxes of all the things I know I can do and also stretch myself into this version of an actor that I never thought I could be with all the action stuff that I really didn't think I could do. On Shazam, I didn't have to do any of the action bits. I had a stunt double who did my one stunt in the whole movie. They wouldn't let me go near it. They wouldn't even let me try. And they were like, you're out of here. So with Lucy Gray, it was one of those things where I watched her conception in the public. Like, I was there when the book was released. I was waiting for that book to come out and was so excited. I had no idea what it was going to be about. And when I read it, it just felt like this is the thing. I grew up watching Jennifer Lawrence do everything that she is amazing at. She was funny. She was endearing. She was tough. She was an action star. And watching her do it like it was nothing in those original films. And so I was reading this book being like, this would be the opportunity of a lifetime. And it wasn't necessarily a step up or outdoing myself in West Side Story, but showing the public that I could do more. It's stretching a different instrument vocally, testing my limits in the action world, but also like emotionally, she's a bit, you know, she's a little mercurial, a little bit crazy. And also you can't tell what her motives are. So she's got this wile in her eye that I was so excited about. And once I met Francis, our director, I just kind of knew it was going to be something really special.
I don't know if there's a specific answer to this question, but because you just brought up her personality, and also because the second I finished reading the book, I'm like, oh my, whoever gets cast in this role, this is going to be the most difficult thing to do. Being able to capture that like bubbly spirit and the fact that she's just like a ray of light, but also do it in a way where you're sure that, I guess, it never comes across as false and never undermines the severity of the situation that she's in.
Yeah. I just wanted people to miss her when she was off screen. That was like the thing that I wanted to capture the most, because I would miss her when she wasn't on the page. And so I just remember thinking like, this is how people felt probably watching her trajectory in The Hunger Games, where they were probably in the Capitol all cozy watching television. And every time she wasn't in the news, it'd be like, it's boring news day. I don't know, that became something that was also really lovely to hear from people when they were first giving their, you know, first social media reactions to the movie. And when they were like, you miss her when she's off screen. It's such an accomplishment to me. And the biggest compliment you could pay me, because that was my approach to her, was you're going to miss her when she's gone, both in a literal sense. And also in a figurative sense, because she haunts Coriolanus for the rest of time. Like, what kind of person do you have to be to screw him up for that long?
Oh, what a perfect way to put it. I feel like that probably also applies to, I mean, really any character, no matter the size of a role in a movie. I feel like maybe the goal should always be like, you want to miss them when they're not on screen, or even just feel their presence when they're not on screen.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, I love exactly. that. So you brought up this stretching you as far as the action goes. So I want to go to a very specific scene for that, because with Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and now with Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, I'm just totally obsessed with how they visualize the start of the games. They just all yes. have their own specific feels, and they're so yes. frenetic. I love it. Can you kind of walk us through, you know, the blocking, the stunts, how you adapted to the camera moves required for that particular scene?
Yeah, I mean, I had been in London until the very tail end of a production and moved to Poland the next day. And that next day we shot the bloodbath. So the rest of my castmates had about 4 to 6 weeks of stunt choreography and training that I simply did not have. As an actor, it is both terrifying and wonderful to get that experience, because you don't have to act about how terrified you are to be in that scenario and how lost you kind of are as a teenage girl who is probably not going to survive longer than 10 minutes and just keep going. So I was very lucky to have very wonderful, patient castmates and wonderful stunt choreographers in Scott and Steve, who were really, really wonderful. It really was my A camera operator, Dave. I posted a photo yesterday of that day, and I fully look airborne. I'm in these heeled boots, this big ruffled dress, and I am sprinting through this arena from my first day on set. They did such an amazing job adapting it from the page to the screen, because it is panic mode for real. You see the dimensions kind of shift in the camera work, because it goes to IMAX. So the same way that they did in Catching Fire, when she's lifted out of that tube and into this arena, and you see the world kind of get bigger around her, and it kind of looks almost fisheye, which is a like panic mode in cinema speak, in my opinion. So it's just like this whirlwind that Frances had created for me to endure. I was terrified, but I felt very safe in the care of Dave, my A camera operator, who was fully just kind of pushing me where I needed to go so that I didn't trip anybody, so that I didn't get actually impaled by a prop. And, you know, and just the care of my castmates, Dimitri Abold coming at me with a machete, me ducking out of the way, Mackenzie Lansing, who plays Coral, with her trident. They were all so prepped that me being the last piece was probably the best thing they could have done, so that I just kind of fit right in and dodge them for real.
I love how much you reference your camera operator and your focus puller. Just like never stop doing that. I just love when I get to talk to like actors that everybody knows, but they take the time to reference the folks behind the scenes who make all the difference on these sets. It's really so special.
I love them. I don't think they get nearly enough attention and credit for what they do. This is on every movie of mine that my A-camera operators in particular are really my allies, because they're gonna make sure you look good, but they're also gonna make sure that you look like you know what you're doing, because they are the geniuses behind a lot of this. They have the closest conversation with your director and your cinematographer, and that was certainly the case on this movie, but on every movie I've done, they've all just been the most brilliant individuals.
So true. All right, I have to let you go in a couple minutes, so I'm going to ask my one spoiler question. So I'm going to put up the spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't read the book or watched the movie. This is like the most spoilery question I could ask, so go watch it and then come back and push me and you can continue on. So Suzanne is the authority, of course, but now having lived in Lucy Gray's shoes for so long, what do you picture her doing after the events of this book, after this movie? How is she living life? And is it just like impossible for her not to want to return?
Well, I like that you make the insinuation that she's alive, because that makes
me know that with certainty. Deep down,
yeah.
I know.
I also know that. I can feel that she got away. She's so much more clever than anybody gives her credit for, because it's just one of those stories where where Coriolanus thinks that he's ahead of the game, and in reality, he's 12 steps behind her. I like to think that she truly, just like the bird and Lucy Gray in the poem that she sings, that she flies away and that she gets to be free the way she wanted to be, that she really did run like the others were planning to do, and that what Sejanus wanted to do, that she was going to do that and carry out that deed in honor of somebody who couldn't escape Coriolanus like she could. And it's not because Sejanus wasn't strong enough, it's just that his heart was too good. And Lucy Gray's isn't. She's a bit more, I believe she's golden hearted, but I believe that she's got more of an edge than anybody else in the film does, without having to actually be a bad person. I believe that she believes in the good of humanity. And so she thinks she can probably either start again or just be free and hide. I hope we get to see the continuation of her story. I don't know. I'm not in charge.
I'm really hoping for that. I would love to see more. All right, I'll end our conversation with two questions about upcoming films. I know these are dangerous questions to ask because I don't know what you're allowed to say. So these are somewhat safe. I'll start with Snow White. Going into the filming of that movie, what quality of that character were you most looking forward to playing? But then also, what's a quality of hers that wound up emerging along the way that wound up being more creatively fulfilling to tap into than you ever could have imagined at the start?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I was really excited when we were having conversations after I had gotten cast with Mark Webb and with, you know, Mark Platt and everybody involved with the filmmaking process, about her fearlessness and her fearlessness that kind of stems from her kindness. Because in line with Lucy Gray, she believes in the inherent goodness of the people. And so through that kindness, she thinks, well, what could possibly hurt me? And therefore she's fearless. And so her kindness and her compassion for those around her and all creatures leads her to not be afraid. And we see it in the cartoon. So it's really nice to be able to bring that to the live action as well. And then something that kind of emerged was this leader within her that I was so happy the writers wanted her to be. And the fact that it's born out of her upbringing, but she finds it within herself throughout the course of the film and throughout the people that love her in the film and show their love for her. Mark Webb and I kind of called it her third eye opening. And there's like a couple of scenes in there where she's speaking like someone who's been alive for much longer than she has. And that's something that I relate to, something that I've been told all my life. And so getting to bring that to a character that I love so deeply and that I've spent so much time with now. It's a really amazing thing as an actor and as a performer. And I can't wait for people to get to see it.
I'm psyched. I love the idea of fearlessness through kindness too.
Yeah.
All right. I promise I'd circle back to Y2K because that ensemble is exceptional. I am so excited to see you all work together. So this is like a little bit of an unfair question because I feel like we don't have time to talk about everyone, but can you maybe pinpoint one scene partner you had in that movie that, I don't know, just blew your mind, you really appreciated, and you can't wait for audiences to see them crush it in that film?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's hard.
No.
It's hard. It's hard, especially because there's so little known about the plot, and that's what's amazing about it, and what people are going to love about it is how much it's going to surprise them. Kyle is such a great director, and working with him was so fun, and I can't wait for people to see it. I do have a lot of scene work with Jaden Martell from It, and I know everyone already knows he's a star. I know this, but I don't know how funny people know that he actually is. He's so funny. He's got great comedic timing. And since this is a Kyle Mooney production, there was a lot of ad-libbing that was welcomed into the film. So truly, I had a very hard time keeping it together in certain scenes with Jaden. And I feel very lucky that I got to know him. We were only together for, I think, like 9 weeks of shooting, but it was an amazing experience. I loved it. I also got to shoot on a scene on a bike on the street where I actually learned to ride a bike in New Jersey. And that was just like cool. And my mom was there. It was so cool. Like the whole experience was amazing. So I haven't seen it cut together yet, but I'm very, very excited. And I hope everybody else is too.
I am very excited. I'll see anything you're in. And in particular, A24 movies are appointment viewing for me because there's always some sort of like unique vibe that they all have. And I don't know, they just make sure that the creative possibilities are endless in this industry, which is why I really appreciate them as a company.
Absolutely.
I also appreciate you taking the time to do this today. I love your work and I love Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. I don't know, to anyone out there who's saying like, I don't know if I want to watch a Hunger Games prequel. I don't know if I could like wait so long and then jump back into that world. Trust me, you can. It continues the franchise in a really beautiful way. And it also serves as an on-ramp for newcomers. So no matter where you're coming from, you are covered. Rachel, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This was wonderful.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.